Yes, you heard that right at the last few seconds. The Mary Tyler Moore Show. So that's where Brad Wilcox picks up. So when you're studying history, right, where does one begin? Because you got to, you know, start back there to get some speed up to move forward. And Brad, Dr. Wilcox, starts in the 70s. And he said that, and it's true, divorce was popularized in the 70s. We had Mary Tyler Moore. Ted and I just finished the complete and total season. And wow. It's funny, you know, more or less. And it was fine. But I agree with Wilcox. I find it to be a propaganda show. Marriage was portrayed very poorly. Boring. If the two stayed together, it was always boringly, and it was dead end. Murray, who stays married, even though he has these fantasies of being with Mary Tyler Moore and other women, looks pecked and bedraggled. His one excitement was his emotional affair with someone else. Lou got a divorce after 24 years of marriage. Why? Because his wife wants to experience something new that she never, which I never could quite get the gist of what she wanted, because she ends up remarrying within a short time. And Ted Baxter and Georgette don't inspire anyone to the married life, even though theirs is probably the best stable one of them all. They're both seemed airheads. But Mary, then Mary, and she self-describes that, then Mary, she makes the day interesting and happy. And so I thought the Mary Tyler Moore Show is propaganda for easy divorce and a single life nicely wrapped up in comedy and big hair. And my friends, that was pivotal.
Given the fact that you just watched that, was how many children were in the show?
Murray would have four, which you didn't see. They adopted a Vietnam young boy, of course, tied to the Vietnam War. And then at the very last, like, season, George backs Georgette and Ted will have two. They will adopt one, an older child, and the other.
Right. And Mary Tyler Moore's character had done it.
And Lou had three daughters, and they're older.
Right. And Mary Tyler Moore had none.
Oh, no. And she's like 37, 38. And she's, you know, woman, hear me roar. What she is, right, terribly naive. At one point, I think, poor Mary, you're so naive. And that's right. There's one episode she has this man over, and if you would have, date rape's a big deal here now, and right, she had set herself up to,
right,
poor naive Mary, she was. So I agree with, and so you say that's one show, Karen. No. Mary Tyler Moore was a pivotal show. It represented, Walter Cronkite was on that. I forget the other big names that made it into her episodes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the thesis statements. Dr. Wilcox states, in writing Get Married, my aim is not to argue that everyone should put a ring on it. Not everyone can or should marry. So we're going back to our disclaimer. But for most of us, getting married and forging a strong family is the best way to build a prosperous, meaningful, and happy life in a way that needs a lot more guidance and support from the culture and law than it is now garnering. Married people are happier and more prosperous than unmarried people.
Right. I mean, and there is no study ever that can, like, back to your point that you had made when you were initially talking about another disclaimer that was possibly in the book, that, you know, that it's sort of taking on the lie that the elite has put out there that any variation of family can produce good results with just by calling themselves family. Suddenly, ergo, you think that you have this panacea. It's like the left saying that we're going to get rid of the poor by simply giving everyone a universal income, right? I mean, once we say, oh well, you don't, if poverty is at the $14,000 mark and you make $15,000, simply by giving you a universal income of $15,000 a year, we've erased poverty, right? I mean, no, it doesn't work that way. Like, you can have all the same words, all the same benchmarkers, quote unquote, but at the end of the day, they don't bear the same benefits. And statistically across the board, anybody who's willing to be honest about that recognizes that a husband and a wife, like, what is the old adage? Get your high school degree. Don't live together before you get married. Those two indicators, and you know, don't have sex before you get married and have children after the pastor has pronounced you man and wife. If you just do those three simple things, graduate from college, don't have promiscuous premarital sex,
get married before
high school diploma, right? If you just do those three things, you in America, it's almost a statistical impossibility for you to live in poverty.
And Sarah did not at all look at my notes ahead of time. And that will be one of the major conclusions of Brad Wilcox looking at the data. Exactly what you said. Not college education, high school.
Yeah, I almost think that there is something to be said about that in regards to, particularly now, that, and I think people are you know, caveat emptor, right? We're starting to become a little bit better buyers of a product. And I do think that COVID inadvertently lifted the curtain on the machine, you know, for the Wizard of Oz kind of thing. You know, there's the great and powerful Oz, I think, has been a little bit of exposed. And now these ridiculous protests that are going on these college campuses, you know, a lot of parents were realizing, gosh, my kids are really coming back a little bit radical. Like, what's going on here? And now suddenly you have this full-blown monstrosity where the parents might have felt that they sent perfectly delightful children to college, expecting them to be polished, right, and molded just like, like, I've given you an almost perfect statue. All that you have to do is like do a little bit of fine sanding, and you come back and find out that you've got this modernist abstract art piece that's a total facsimile of what you had sent there. So I think that that belief that people have to be complete before they have something to offer someone is really problematic. Number one, from a cultural standpoint, but I think particularly since, you know, we're speaking about this not only as a social reality or a lived reality, but as a sacramental reality, that God calls people to a particular state in life, that there is actually almost, I don't know if it would be a sin of omission, right? But perhaps something like that, where, when, if you have a vocation, get about it. Right, God has graces to give you for the state in life to which he is calling you. And if you fritter away useless years because you think that there's a particular order in which you have to achieve something, you really are missing the point of the graces that are inherent in the sacrament.
It's true. Okay. Not saying everyone, but Therese, she, and I have to be honest for myself, I have always thought of it as a great, great grace that I was given my vocation to marriage at such a young age. And certainly Therese at 15 felt the same. So that you can get about your business of doing that which you are called. Same for you, Sarah. Of course, there's that disclaimer, not everybody, whatever. But the truth of the matter is, the sooner you are given your vocation and you act on it, the happier we all, you will be, all of us will be. All right, my friends, let us pick up in the next episode with an outline of the text. Till then, my friends, fides et ratio.